listening to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brain. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brain.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Hello, brains. I hope you brought your vest with your courage, because you're going to need it. We got a soldier here. You know we're fighting many wars, but we're not fighting the war as intensely as our guest today, Nan Johnson. Nan is a seasoned healthcare leader. Nan has over 25 years of experience in healthcare, marketing, and operations. She became a hospice volunteer and found her passion was palliative medicine and end-of-life care. She has held several leadership positions in hospice organizations, one as Vice President of Marketing and Business Development for Lightbridge Hospice and Palliative Care in San Diego, and also a former Executive Director in Monterey and Santa Cruz. Also, she's worked here in San Diego at the Chopra Center for Wellbeing in La Jolla. But brains, life often doesn't unfold the way that we expect it will. In 2005, Nan discovered that she had early stages of breast cancer. Nan did everything she could, every treatment available for her cancer. Like many women, Nan thought that she had beaten it, only to learn that it had returned in 2014, being diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. I want to thank all of you that are tuning in. I'm really, really impressed that you're all up this morning to get this information and to send our sister Nan Johnson love and light. So I'd like to welcome her to the show. Hello, Nan. How you doing today, babe?
Hi, April. Thank you. I'm doing well today. Thank you for having me.
You're very, very welcome. So, again, thank you so much for your courage to be able to come on the show and walk us through, you know, the life and the experience that you're going through right now. It's not an easy journey, but, again, we're all soldiers on the battlefield. So introduce yourself to my brains and tell them a little bit about your story, your history, and what's happening right now.
All right. Thanks again, April. Well, hello, everyone. I think you summed it up pretty well, April, my work experience. And for most of my career, I was in healthcare, and the last 15 years, I really considered it an honor and a privilege and a calling to work in hospice and palliative medicine. And the irony didn't escape me when I learned that I had cancer the first time in 2005, early stage, and then, of course, in 2014 when it came back. But I'm very grateful for my time working in healthcare with so many wonderful people, and especially in end-of-life care, where I learned that facing a very difficult prognosis and illness and harsh treatment, sometimes harsh treatment, and your own death is a good thing to learn about. And it's not something that we talk about much in our culture. And it gets your attention very fast when you have a life-limiting illness like advanced cancer. And I'm very grateful for my time in healthcare and all my colleagues and friends and what I especially learned from hospice patients and their families.
Right. Right. So tell us a little bit about, you know, I can't even imagine getting the call from your physician telling you that you have cancer. Can you tell us a little bit about the reaction? And did you find it yourself, or was this a part of a mammogram? Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like so many women, I think you perhaps hope and feel that you will not be among the many who find out they have cancer. And I did not have a lump anywhere. And I really think that, and I'm going to tell you that somebody's about to ring my doorbell, and you might hear a dog barking because
that's all right. That's a part of the real TV. We have dogs that bark on the edge. Two-legged and four-legged.
Oh, that's so funny. Of course, it would be just in this 20 minutes. But at any rate, it was really hard hearing it. And what I will tell you is that I was one of the 30% of women where there's no lump, there's nothing noticeable, and that a mammogram, in my case, I believe really did save my life because the technician thought she saw something very deep, and I was 46 years old. So I don't know if a lot of people know this, but when you're younger, you tend to, you tend to have denser breasts, so it's harder to see on the mammograms, but they've definitely improved the technology. And it was so deep against my chest wall that by the time I would have discovered it myself, it would have probably been too late. So I'm very glad that I had the mammogram, that they really pushed to do the right diagnostics. And while it was scary, looking back, and this is probably what I would say to every woman, you really are in a better place if you get on the front end of it, no matter how frightening it is. And I was pretty sure that it was cancer, and I'll tell you, my experience was not ideal, which is the case for many, many people getting the diagnosis, because briefly, I had an ultrasound, and I thought, well, you know, it'll be a few days before I get the results, and the radiologist came in, and she looked like she was about 12 years old. She looked very young to me. And she said, I think you have cancer. And I was still laying on the table in the gown. This was 2005. I was not at all prepared for it. I thought my doctor would tell me.
Right.
It was
kind of insensitive, huh?
Yeah, it was insensitive. And then I couldn't get an appointment to see my doctor until 7 days later. And then, of course, she just reiterated the same thing. So that's probably one of the hardest things for most people, whether you're facing a first-time possible diagnosis or the fear of it coming back, is the waiting. Is the waiting, the uncertainty. That's hard. That is definitely hard. And when you hear it, and I've shared this, or I've heard a lot of people share this, you're kind of in shock, and the emotions really run.
Yeah, there's no doubt about the shock.
Yeah, you're in shock, and your emotions run the gamut from disbelief to fear, sadness, and everything in between.
Okay, and so as you progressed and you started your treatment, tell us a little bit about some of the treatment options, because you did share with me that you tried many modalities, be it traditional medicine, holistic approaches. Can you tell us a little bit about that and your experiences?
Sure, and I think the good news for today is that there are many different options, and I think the important thing is to educate yourself and choose what's right for you. If I had a dime for every time somebody told me to eat this and not eat that and take that supplement and my cancer will be cured, I would be able to retire. So you have to really educate yourself and choose for yourself. And my choice was to absolutely take what the best of Western medicine had to offer, to understand what the risks and the benefits were of those chemotherapies and different treatments. And another piece of good news, if you choose to go more of a conventional route, is there are so many more things you can do to help manage your side effects. And then to complement that, and I think it is truly complementary or integrative medicine, is to help yourself be as healthy as possible along the way. And when I say that, I'm talking about my experience both the first time back in 2005 and then since my cancer came back in 2014. And for me, those modalities have been meditation and yoga and prayer and at different times to manage different side effects, I've used acupuncture and also different types of diets. I wouldn't say a strict diet, but definitely
right.
a diet with more vegetables and lots of water, drink lots of water, lots
right.
of fluids, different types of herbal teas. So those
did you have
some?
Did you try any CBD oil? I know people that you know they promise by it. They say that it is the be all mm-hmm. end all, and I'm going to have a Cornell University specialist that is going to be on my show next week, actually, that's going to give us the data with the CBD oil because I don't know. You know, people pick it up at the pot shop. I don't know if that's the best place to get your medication, you know. Then there's the supplement. Then there is the liquid form. So I don't know. Did you try that at all?
No, I haven't. And I'm not opposed to it. I guess how I've been looking at that is if I needed it to, say, help manage nausea or reduce pain or help with sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
However, I would be very interested to hear what your guest has to say because I guess I go into any type of treatment with a healthy skepticism because, you know, over the years you do hear that this or that really does, you know, is the answer. And I guess the skeptic part of me says, well, if it is, then I really do think everybody would be gravitating to that.
Right.
But
you know, like I
that,
know that healthy
yeah.
people are not big business. And I hate to say that. I say that in the most empathetic way as possible. You know, sick people is what keeps the medical industry going. And so different things like, you know, clinical trials. And did you try any of those or stem cell research? Did you go that far? I'm a big proponent of stem cell research. It's a lot of, you know, it's a big expense. You've got to have the right person. It requires, you know, being down and being isolated for a long time. But those are options, and they're very expensive. Were you able to, you know,
yeah,
to incorporate
you know,
any
yeah.
of that?
Well, in my case, and this is another piece that is really where the whole field is just expanding and exploding in a good way. Right now, the traditional chemotherapy, radiation, other things like that, although radiation is very targeted now, has been to kill all the fast-growing cells. And the future of medicine is really, or especially in oncology, is precision medicine. So
right.
that it's really targeted to you, and this is where it gets into some of the research, immunology, stem cell research. I think that's where the field is going. In my case, and I have had genetic testing and genomic testing on my tumor, there's nothing right now that leaps out that says this would be an ideal match for helping me rid myself of cancer. However, they're discovering things every day. So would I do a clinical trial? Absolutely. Would I do immunotherapy? Absolutely, if I thought those things would be helpful. But right now,
right.
in my particular case, there's nothing there for me right now.
Mm. So can you share with my brains a little bit about the side effects? You know, I had to take a medication, and I asked the pharmacist. I said, okay, so what are the side effects? And she says, oh, you could lose your hair, and you could do this, and you could do that. But I can't even imagine, you know, how gut-wrenching it could be with the nausea and the vomiting and the hair loss. You know, did you have to go through a lot of that? Did you experience a lot of that?
I did, April. I've lost my hair 3 times, and I'm happy to report that it has grown back 3 times.
Oh, bless your heart.
Yeah. You.
I can get your hair option, girl. I tell you, I got about 45 wigs here. So don't worry about no hair, okay? And I love a bald head because then that shows your brain.
Right. It does, and I definitely have empathy for bald men now because my head was always cold. So that's been a new experience. But
people
say
that the scalp is very sensitive too. Because I don't know. They say after that and because of what you're going through that the scalp is very sensitive. That's why most women opt to just go with a bald head or a scarf versus putting on a wig. Was your scalp sensitive?
Yes, it was. Absolutely, it was. And my choice was a ball cap, actually. I don't know why. If I had a scarf on, it looked like I was ready to clean someone's house. So that was not a good look for me.
Okay.
I wore a ball cap. And, yes, my scalp was very sensitive. So that's a little point. But I want to also go back to something you said earlier because I would be remiss if I didn't. Big businesses and big pharmaceutical companies and research companies do make money, but I do believe in my heart of hearts that a lot of us are alive today because of that research and because of the brave souls that did go through those clinical trials. I guess I'm just so grateful. I am so grateful that all of it is available. And hopefully everyone in this country now has insurance, but it can be
good luck with that.
Yeah.
Good luck with the insurance part of it. I had a niece who was 28 years old. We lost her. She had breast cancer, and it went straight to her brain. She didn't even survive a year. And, she lived in Los Angeles, and she did not have the best care. And I don't think that she was really educated enough to really support herself through the journey and all of the options that she had. So, again, I commend all of the people that are in clinical trials. I ask that all ethnicities, that we don't just have one prototype of being Caucasian American, because there are different genes, there is different DNA that needs to brush with a broad stroke the entire universe. And so I really ask that all of us get involved when we have the opportunity to, give a sample, do a clinical trial, give blood, go out and educate ourselves, because now they're making personalized medicines. I do a lot of work with people here at UCSD, and so I have an opportunity to see firsthand what is going on in the world of medicine and cancer and things. And it is, like you said, it's ever evolving every day. Can you share with us now a little bit about the support that you're getting from family and friends and the journey that they're on with you as they walk your hand through this process?
Sure. And I do want to say you just nailed it. Personalized medicine is the future of this. And when I go to UCSD, which I am over there frequently because that's where I get my medical care, it is like a United Nations. Every color, every race, every age, every ethnicity.
You got it.
So you are so right about that. You are so right about that. You know, you bring up another really important point, and you talked about your niece. Having support as you go through any illness or life, especially a life-limiting illness, is so important. And for many of us, it's a different combination. Maybe some family members, maybe friends, maybe people we meet along the way, maybe folks in our support groups. I've been doing the University of California, San Diego, that's UCSD for those folks not in San Diego. I've been doing their expressive writing group, Writing Through Cancer, which has been tremendously helpful for me. For other people, it may be, a walking group, getting out and walking.
Right.
I've been very fortunate to have family members and friends that have been supportive, and, I've been lucky that I haven't had too many times where, I literally couldn't get up and make a meal. But when I have those times, and I know in the future when I have those needs, that I do have a support group around me that will come and help. And for people who don't have that, there are resources out there. And I would suggest that people talk to the social worker wherever they're getting their health care to connect them with those resources. Because sometimes we take it for granted that people do have family and friends
right.
that can help, and not everybody has that. So,
sometimes in situations like this, sometimes they don't want it. You know, there
right.
is so many emotions that open up floodgates. You know, there's anger, there's depression, there's self-pity, there's thoughts of suicide. There's a lot of things that rattle around in our brain. But I just ask that people open themselves up. You have no idea of what the universe has for you until you open yourself up to it and you ask for it. So ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask, you know, take your neighbor up on the fact of, hey, do you want to go sit at the park? Or, you know, can I come over and clean your house with my headscarf on? Can I cook you a meal? Can I walk your dog? Can I read you a story? You know, really take advantage of that, because we're all on this journey. And my mother is 88 years old, and she'll tell you in a minute. She say, if you live long enough, baby, everybody's going to get a turn at the wheel. So
yeah.
just because
yeah.
you're in a certain
Beautiful.
Situation, you know, you don't have to box yourself in. You don't have to feel isolated. Reach out. Let somebody touch you. Let somebody love on you. So I want to ask you a very personal question, and I ask permission, Brains, before I ask this. You're going to go, wow, she went way out there. No, but I asked first. You've done work, extensive work, with palliative care. And you've done work with end-of-life patients. And I had another guest on a few weeks ago, and that's heavy. That is really heavy. And then my neighbor next door, she sought that out to be a hospice care provider. Firstly, mm-hmm. I'd like for you to explain to what is hospice care and palliative care. And, you know, my neighbor told me that was some of the most rewarding work that she has ever done, is to help someone through the process as they transition. And then on the end of that, I want to ask you how you feel about, you know, knowing, we all know that we're going to pass at a certain time, but you have been dealt this hand. How are you dealing with that?
All great questions, April. Well,
too many at once probably, but I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Well, we'll start. I did work in the field of hospice and palliative care for 15 years, and the field has been evolving. And hospice really came out of England and Europe, and the idea that people at the end stage of life didn't necessarily need to be in a hospital to die.
Right.
And that to bring back the opportunity for people to die where they want to die and die comfortably in their home. For most people would say they would prefer to die in their home. So really that got started in the late 60s, early 70s, and it evolved, and people have come to understand, okay, hospice is for end of life. And just briefly, the important piece about that is the way the benefit is structured is usually, it means if you have 6 months or less to live, that two doctors agree that's probably your prognosis. A lot of people misunderstand it and think it's for the last week or the last few days, but really, really, it's months, and people benefit, generally speaking, more the longer they're on hospice, because they have time to sort through their issues, get their pain under control, get symptoms under control, say their goodbyes. So that's
right.
really the beauty of the hospice program. The palliative care piece comes in because so many hospice patients do deal with issues of pain and symptoms and all sorts of things that can make life very, very uncomfortable. And hospice physicians became very good at learning how to manage pain and symptoms. And so palliative care is a bigger umbrella than hospice. So if
right.
you're, for example, now in the hospital and you have really bad pain and the hospital wants to send you home, forget that you're even at end of life. Maybe you've got 5 more years. You will likely, in most major hospitals now, get a palliative care consultation. And what that means is they want to make sure you're going home with the right set of things to keep you as comfortable as possible. So palliative medicine, in a lot of cases, people think, oh, if they want palliative care for me, that means I'm going to die. Not necessarily. Palliative care is all about looking at the person from a holistic perspective, their needs on many different levels, their support system, and what's going to really keep them as healthy and as comfortable as possible. Palliative medicine has a big role in hospice, of course, but it's broader than hospice.
Right, right.
So
okay,
that,
because, again, hospice
clear?
is a philosophy more so than a hospital care. But in some places, I talked to someone in Oregon, that the hospice is different because the hospice provider takes on everything. You know, they're the social worker administering the medication, you know, getting the you know, bedding or whatever other special amenities that an individual might need. So it can be, can it vary from state to state?
No, it can't. And so that's what I was going to say. That is the good news. If you're under hospice care, whether you have Medicare, Medicaid, Medi-Cal, private insurance, what they call the benefit is the same. So those things that the person in Oregon was telling you will be the same in California, as Florida, as Ohio, as Missouri, Oregon.
Great.
And they will provide the medical care, the nursing care, the social work support, the home health aides, chaplaincy or spiritual care if you want it, a volunteer. So, yeah, that's the good news, April, that is the hospice benefit. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And so when you have that conversation in your head, yeah, and when you have that conversation with yourself and you look in the mirror and you say, okay, today is a good day, I wake up, you know, you have that I am conversation, you're making your, you know, your settlement with your God or your goddess, what's rattling around in your head? What are you thinking? Are you thinking, because I think in my heart of hearts that there is glory on the other side, that I read somewhere there's no sickness, no disease, that the streets are lined with milk and honey. What kind of conversations are you saying? What are you talking about?
You know, I am so glad you asked this question. I do think it's time for death to come out of the closet, because what do we know in this life? I mean, we know birth, we know living, and we know death. And I happen to believe like you do, and this is my belief, so I would never put it on anyone else, but my personal belief is that anybody who created a world and a universe as or whatever the divine intelligence, whatever name you want to give it, I have to believe that where we're going is as good and beautiful and perfect as where we came from. And so do I still have fear? Is there still uncertainty? Of course. And I think for most of us, it's about, well, I want to live, you know, I want to live to see my niece have her baby. I want to live, and this is, I mean, I'm actually speaking for myself. I want to go to my nephew's wedding. You know, right. I want to see some of my grandnieces and nephews grow older and graduate from high school. So you want to live, and in my case now, I want to live so I can give back. I can give back for the many blessings I've had in my life. But we never know when our time is. And I think when you are diagnosed with a serious disease, for most people, it gives you pause. Well, what has my time on earth been about? How am I going to spend the rest of my time? Do I believe in a God? Do I have a faith? What is that faith? So it really, for most people, I think it opens the doors to those questions.
Right. And the thing is, too, you know, it's finding peace within that. You know, my brother, they just called me and told me, well, we found your brother dead. And I was like shocked, but I was bent, but I was not broken, man. I wasn't, because I felt his spirit. I was disappointed that we didn't, you know, have that last beer together. But the transition, because I knew who he was as a person, and for him to be disabled, that would have been worse than him just, you know, going to the hereafter. But, Brains, I want all of you to just pause and take a moment and send my sister and all of my sisters that are out there under the sound of our voice love and light. Again, because you don't have to be diagnosed and have an opportunity to prepare for life. Sometimes it can just catch you off guard. But know that life is precious, and you are precious, Nan, and we thank you so much for sharing your story. I know that it was very intimate. It's very personal, but you are really helping someone else that's going through this journey right now. Can you tell my brains how to get in contact with you, if there's groups or organizations that you want to support? Maybe you want to promote the writing group. I know that writing is very cathartic. Can you share that with us?
Sure. I think the best way is people can email me. My email is Nan Johnson, just like it sounds, NanJohnson. 555@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to help anyone any way I can, and certainly connect them with the resources if they're here locally in San Diego at UCSD or other groups that I know about.
Well, thank you so much, and know that again, be not afraid. We meet to be more afraid about what we do know than what we don't know. And I hear your heart, and I hear your spirit, and I hear your intention. I have no worries. I just want you to be as comfortable as you possibly can as you walk with us on your journey here in life. And I love you deeply and completely, and I don't even know you, but just feel this hug.
feel it, April.
And I hope to see you at the drum circle, okay?
All right.
Brains, okay. That's what we do here on The Edge. We give you what you need, okay? Support, love, encouragement, all of that. Go back and listen to other edgy conversations. Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, all around the world. Know that my arms are open wide, and I'm trying to hold on to you. Have a good day. Be good, Nan. I love you, girl.
Love you back. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.